A65. Number 14A.
Yes. So, again, you can see that we can really order our thinking and our consciousness according to categories, according to laws, and then elaborate those laws so that our thought is trained into very definite lines of reasoning that are fundamental. But also, again, to point out that these laws are not just laws that one can read with one's eyes on a piece of paper and say, yes, 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 but that there is the necessity of having a prayerful, a meditating, pondering attitude within oneself. That only then really the power of these laws begin to operate and realize themselves in human existence. It is always a question that we know what to attribute really to the seven synonymous terms. So again we can see how necessary it was first to have the syllabus class with that exercises which we made over a whole year, first of concept building of the seven synonymous terms, which would lead to tonality building of the seven synonymous terms until they become consciousness within us. And only when they become consciousness within us, they begin to build our being. So as they become being building. Just take as an example what we started out to do. Say, if we are quiet within ourselves, and contemplate that law in its elaboration, where we sit down and have the whole world under our feet, the whole material world under our feet, and we say, there is another universe, there is another reality, there is another being that does not consist of that world. This is a shadow world, unknown, really to the divine being, and we begin to contemplate that mind is its own infinite mind. So that we see that that infinite divine primeval conception of being, which is mind, which is an intelligent, creative conception of being, the primeval, intelligent, ruling everything in being, is its own infinite mind. Therefore, it's the only mind that mind can mind. And that gives us a touch that on the level of science itself, any other mind is unknown, does not exist. Therefore, one builds up within ourselves a very great awe before the fact that there actually does not exist any other mind, no personal mind, no human mind, no erroneous mind, no corporeal mind, no evil mind, no personal mind. It establishes at once within ourselves also the fact that no mind can operate, that no mind can actually produce anything that is evil, that can do evil, that has a chance, that has a channel, that has a law. And we build up a terrific sense that only that one mind is ever going on, its own infinite mind. Then perhaps you go on and see that mind is its own infinite spirit. Well, what does it mean? Again, we reestablish in our consciousness that the mind, that primeval conception of being, that mind which had always in mind only to be creative in an intelligent way, in an absolute, positive sense, in a constructive sense, that mind is its own infinite spirit. It's therefore its own infinite substance. It is substantial. It's its own infinite reality. It's its own infinite development and unfoldment and evolution, so that one can see this mind always evolves and evolves and evolves its own mind. And that, therefore, because it is on the level of science itself, it tells us that there is no other spirit. That there actually does not need to be taken in consideration the supposition that there could be any other reality. Any other reality but the reality of mind. And so one builds up within ourselves a sense then there is no reality in mortal mind. There is no reality in what mortal mind is talking and thinking and acting and doing. And one feels that one lives only in that reality of the one mind. Or you go on to mind is its own infinite soul. What does it mean? You know, you sit back and think, golly, golly, golly. Mind is its own infinite soul. Mind, that primeval conception of being, that mind which produces all, creates all, sees all, conceives of all, and of everything, that is its own infinite soul. It's its own infinite unchangeability. It's its own infinite protection insofar that nothing can touch that mind. That one infinite mind is untouched by sin, is untouched by an outside world. But it cannot be touched by an outside world because there is no sin. So you suddenly begin to realize on that level that sin is unknown. There is no such a thing. There is no isness in sin, in any selfish motive. And so one begins to establish clear and clear that mind is its own infinite unchangeability, its own infinite untouchable identity, that it can never be changed, that it can never lose anything of its mindness, that mind never loses anything, cannot lose anything, that it's always in its whole, in its full form there, in its full beauty, in its full conception there. Or you go on and you see that this mind is its own infinite principle. And you see, it's its own infinite principle. It doesn't need to be to have another principle. Mind principles itself. Therefore, that primeval conception of being, that primeval intelligence of being, that creative intelligence of being, which we have seen is the reality of being and is untouchable and unchangeable, is its own principle. Therefore, it begins to act on its own. It begins to govern of its own. And I begin to see my world in that whole universe of being, which is the only being. There is only that mind operating as principle, which is the mind of God. Therefore, I can see the whole spiritual power of that mind in operation. I can see the power of demonstration of that mind in operation, that mind just roars down from the top of the mountain to all the valleys and just smashes up everything that is not of the nature of mind, because it just comes down and says, I don't know anything except me. There is no other mind that can have a principle, that can have a dominating power, that can have a governing power, that can have a power of demonstration. There is no other mind than that. And that fills you all up with that enormous active and operative sense of that one mind. As the only mind, because mind is its own infinite governing principle. Can you hear that? Can you hear? It is like a thunder rolling down from the hills and say, I'm mind, I'm the only mind, I'm that mind which is my own principle. And therefore, that principle is going to govern. That principle is going to rule. That is the authority and the only authority. Mind is its own authority. There is no other authority. Can you hear the power in it when it comes to be its own infinite principle? Or you go on to life and you begin to feel out what it means that mind is its own infinite life. Think of it, that mind is its own infinite eternity, that mind has within itself the ability to eternalize itself. Nothing can destroy that mind, because there is nothing outside of that mind. Anything that is not like mind is unknown, and therefore has no isness. There is only one life. Mind is its own infinite life. And that gives one a sense that that mind is infinitely individualized at work, because that mind as principle is constantly operating, and now as life we can see that one intelligence, that one, if I would say it in a diluted way, that one thinking God, that one thinking universe, mind, is its own infinite life, is its own infinite eternalization, so that that mind can never die out, can never have an end, can never be destroyed, because there is no other mind there. Or you come to the tone and see, well, but that mind is also its infinite truth. And you just feel how that mind, as the mind of the universe, as that intelligence of the universe, as that infinite creative mind of the universe, just has one thing, that it is own infinite truth, namely that it is pervading everything as the mind that is true, as the factuality of mind, so that there is no possibility that any other mind can be factual, can be true. And one gets a sense of that one mind penetrating every situation as truth, penetrating through every situation as the only truth, because it's only one truth, and there is no error, there is no opposition to that truth, and you have a sense that that mind, which is own infinite truth, just does not know any error, knowing error. Just does not know any error. Or you get the sense of mind being its own infinite love. A wonderful sense. A wonderful sense. Think of it, that mind, capital M. What is that mind, capital M? It's that world mind, that God mind, that only mind that has an idea. That only mind that is aware of its idea, that only mind which conceives of an idea, that's the mind, is its own infinite love. What does that mean? That that intelligent, conceiving mind has its own plan, has its own purpose, has its own teleological aim. It knows what it wants to fulfill. It knows which plan it wants to fulfill. It has no other plan but to fulfill itself. There is no possibility that anything else can fulfill itself. No possibility that any mortal mind can fulfill its plan, that any mortal mind can really have an aim and a purpose and a target and anything like that. It's just showing, God, I live in a universe in which there is a mind thinking about itself, mind minding itself as love, mind minding itself as a plan of love, as a destiny, as a mission that is given to everything, that has a purpose in everything, that has a purpose of fulfillment in everything. There is just no possibility of something not being at the point of fulfillment of perfection. It just doesn't leave anything a chance to have another purpose, another fulfillment, but what mind conceives of its own fulfillment. Do you feel what happens? Can you see that this all makes void any concept that there could be any other mind at work. See, on that level of science itself, when you go through that elaboration of mind through the seven, it really shows or gives you the certainty that we don't have to deal with the question, well, mortal mind is the cause of all disease. It's there the question that there cannot exist a mortal mind, that such a thing as mortal mind is absolutely unknown. Absolutely unknown. Because it's unknown and non-existent, it has nothing in itself with which to do anything. So you don't just correct mortal mind, you see the nothingness of mortal mind, the impossibility of a mortal mind having anything, have any power, any substance, any identity, any power of government, any eternalization. It has no power of demonstration, it has no plan, it has no purpose, it has no aim, nothing. And as one establishes that, through all the seven synonymous terms, you really build up a terrific universe, the universe of reality. Can you see that if we take a law like this and know how to elaborate it by substituting the seven synonymous terms, say, for God, that thought cannot wander. It is directed in a direct line that is dictated by God, that is dictated by the categories. It isn't so that I wanted to bring out, see, that very often we are in a situation where we feel, well, I should work about something. And then you say to yourself, but how shall I work about it? As if you would be at loss how to go about a situation. What shall I think? Then perhaps you take up some idea and think about that idea, and then you run out of it, and then you think, what else should I think? And you pick up something else. So it is as one would pick out of a big heap of ideas, just hear one, and hear one, and hear one, and there one, and put them together. And every time you come to the end of this point, you feel, now what shall I take up also, and what should I think also? All that is the hit and miss method, which is not the scientific method, but the moment you know the laws, then these questions don't arise, you flow with the laws. They dictate to us in which way to think fundamentally. And so that question, how should I work about this and that question, just doesn't arise anymore. You just go to laws. And they dictate what the laws contain. All right. Well, so with this you would have a nice guiding line how to practice. And when I say practice, I mean not just wait until something goes wrong and then you say, now I have to do something about it. It would be much nicer if we would be really scientists that are just interested in establishing a consciousness of truth. Therefore, the preventive activity, where we really take these laws just for the purpose of the laws, for the purpose and for the sake and glory of God, and not just because we want to get rid of some kind of error. Okay, now we go to the next level, to the level of divine science. Now, when we come to the level of divine science, we know that we have those four sides of the city, the world, Christ, Christianity, and science. Therefore, we can ask ourselves, how can we symbolize really the point of intersection of these four through the synonymous terms? In the survey, what we have done, we tried to symbolize them through specific ideas or specific terms, because specific terms are much easier at the beginning to grasp, but naturally they are not full. If you want to have a full sense of it, we must always symbolize it through a synonymous term, because only a synonymous term stands for the whole of God. And so Mr. Dawley showed here how he felt that through studying the textbook, he could see that the word in divine science is accentuated, now we have to be clear, is accentuated by the synonymous term life. And in which way as life? He always said as the one life, that on that oneness he put the accent, because the whole level is the level of oneness. Therefore, that which stands out is really the one life. So it isn't the exaltation of life, or it isn't so much the fullness of life or the impulsion of life, etc. These are not really the place values. What makes up the word is that it is just one word, the word of life, and therefore the one undivided life. So here we feel that life can be symbolized through the one undivided, eternal, everlasting. Can you see, you get all those terms about life, or those ideas of life that indicate really the space sense of divine science, the all-inclusiveness of divine science. Well, there is nothing more inclusive, say, than eternal as everlasting. Life also here is expressed through the self-existence of life. Can you hear the self-existence? Very much on the level of divine science, you have a lot of these terms that start with a self, because it's all turned into one. It's a universe of the one universe, therefore self-existent, self-maintained. All that comes out here. If life in divine science must bring out the coexistence of life and life's idea, then we see here something very nice. If you see, we had on divine science always the coexistence of principle and idea, therefore of the synonymous term with its idea, the coexistence of it. Therefore, you can see that here life lives itself. That life lives itself. That life demonstrates life, as Mrs. Eddy calls it. It's a most interesting statement where she says life with a capital L demonstrates, and then life again with capital L. She could just as easily have said life demonstrates life with a small L. That's also true. But would that be the level of divine science? No. What level would that be? Life, capital L, demonstrates life, small L. Huh? Absolute Christian Science, huh? Yeah. Because it's an absolute sense, that little L. Huh? But if we would say that life demonstrates life over death, huh? Then it would be Christian Science. So one has to really be aware. In the textbook, when Mrs. Eddy uses the term life with a capital L and then with a small L, and every time she will bring out a different aspect. Say, for instance, she speaks about there is no life in matter, and at one point she capitalizes life, other times she does not capitalize life. The same rendering, huh? But sometimes capitalized, sometimes not capitalized. And each time it is a different meaning. See, if it's capitalized, it means that life, God, is not in matter. When she doesn't capitalize that life is not in matter, she means the life of man, the true life of man, is not in matter. So that we live not in matter. Well, that was a side remark. Hmm? So we have here as the word, the accentuation that there is beingness, is isness, that is on the level of divine science, self-existence, self-maintained, that it is life to itself, life living life. But when we come to the Christ, to the Christ truth, then we get something else.